Okay, good evening everyone. My name's Dean Winter, I'm the Mayor of Kingborough and I'm delighted to welcome you to this Kingborough Council meeting on Monday the 18th of January 2021 at 5:30 p.m. and so I officially declare the meeting open. My first job is to let everyone know that these meetings are recorded and not only are they recorded and live streamed on Facebook but they're also made available as an audio recording on our website. And the General Manager, can you confirm that we've commenced the recording?
Confirmed.
Thanks very much. It's also a good opportunity to let people know that in speaking to the General Manager today, he's informed me that from our next council meeting on the 1st of February, we'll be allowing a small number of community members back into the chamber for our meetings. In line with the requirements from the state government, though, there will be only a limited number of people, and will need to book to come in. Obviously, it'll be free, but just first in, best dressed. You'll need to. There's a few giggles around here, quite rightly. There's a few giggles. That'd be a tough sell. but look, you will be able to. To pre-book and come in, and it'll be first in, best dressed, but likely through an Eventbrite or something like that. Are we pleased to have people back in the chamber? Obviously, we'll be COVID safe when we do it, but we've missed having members of the public here as well. But of course, we'll continue to live stream via Facebook. It's been going really well, and I think it's a change that's here to stay. Next item is acknowledgement of traditional custodians. And tonight I'd like to begin by paying our council's respect to the traditional and original custodians of this land, the Muwinina people. We acknowledge the traditional custodians who have walked upon and cared for this land for thousands of years. We pay our respects to the elders past and present and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal people who follow in their ancestors' footsteps. Attendees this evening, we have myself, Councillor Winter, we have Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street, Councillor Wass and Councillor Reet. From our staff this evening, we have our General Manager, Gary Arnold, our Chief Financial Officer, John Breen, our Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Daniel Smee, our new Director of Environment, Development and Communities, Katrina Stevenson. Welcome, Katrina, to your first meeting. Our Manager of Development Services is Tasha Tyler Moore. Our Senior Environmental Health Officer is Abby Maguire. Our Customer Services Coordinator is Kelly Nichols. And our Executive Assistant is Amanda Morton. Apologies this evening. On a leave of absence, we have Councillor Westwood and Councillor Fox. And also we have an apology this evening from Councillor Grace. Confirmation of minutes is next, and recommend a motion that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 23 held on the 14th of December 2020 be confirmed as a true record. Looking for a mover and seconder. Moved by Councillor Reet, seconded by Councillor Bastone. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motions carried unanimously. Next item is declarations of interest. Does anyone have an interest they'd like to declare in any item in tonight's meeting? There are none. Transfer of agenda items. Would anyone like to transfer an agenda item? There are none, so we'll move on. Questions without notice from the public. As I said earlier, from our next meeting, we'll be able to have a gallery back and able to ask questions without notice. But without a public gallery, we are restricted to questions on notice, and that's the next item. So questions on notice are where people have sent an email to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au, addressed it to the General Manager as a question on notice for an upcoming council meeting, and you get your question answered in the next available agenda. Unfortunately, though, and probably due to Christmas, we didn't have any for this meeting, so we now move on to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? Councillor Wass, and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I was wondering whether I can have a brief update on the Adventure Bay Beach and surrounding areas following the report of the burst beanbag, whether or not Parks and Wildlife were able to clean up the entire beach and the surrounding areas, whether councillors had to be involved, and also including whether anyone has owned up to this incident or has been traced.
We'll take that on notice, Councillor Watts. We don't have the that member of staff with us this evening. Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Bastone. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I've got a couple of questions. My first question is about the 26th of January. For many Australians, January 26 is a day of mourning that recognises invasion and dispossession of First Nations land and as such is a day of mourning. Has our council reached out to local First Nations organisations to offer our council's allyship and support in the lead up to the 26th of January?
Thanks for your question, Councillor Cordova. It was actually on your prompting that council reached out to our local Aboriginal organisation, CTAC, last week to discuss some potential idea, and one potential idea from yourself around Australia Day and different things that council can do. You'd be aware that council used to hold our Kimber Awards on Australia Day and no longer does. We hold it on a separate day so that we can still have Aboriginal elders there to welcome us and enjoy and be more inclusive. I'll be meeting with CTAC, I believe it's the first week in February, so it'll be after the 26th to have that to have a discussion. But it is also noteworthy that council you would usually have an involvement in a day on the beach, but this year there is no a day on the beach, so I'm not aware. Obviously, we've got our citizenship ceremony that we'll be holding on the 26th of January. But that's the only civic event that will be held on that day here in Kingborough.
Thanks, Matt. My second question is about the Margate Hills Community Group. The Margate Hills Community Group has repeatedly expressed the desire for additional road safety signage to be erected on Van Moyes Road, Margate. Is there any update on how these plans are progressing? What additional road safety signage is proposed and required? And when will the additional road safety signage be installed?
Yeah, thanks for your question. Just before Christmas, I met with Mr. Reeve about this issue and the correspondence that we've heard from the Community Association. I've since had a few conversations with them. Some of the treatments that we can make on that road include some changes, some minor cutbacks to vegetation to increase sight distances on some of the more dangerous corners. We're also having a look at a grant application for rural road safety improvements on that particular site, and in fact that went in, when I say going, looking at, I'll look further at my notes, it's actually now been submitted, and that was a grant application for site benching, passing bays, shoulder widening, additional signage, and that work under that grant, particular grant round, would need to be done this financial year. So we are seeking that funding to make those safety upgrades, and I think they'll be broadly in line with the Margate Hills Community Association's desires that they've been expressing to, I think, all councillors.
Okay, thank you. My next question is about the delegated authority list for the 2nd of December to the 5th of January, which is on page 327 of tonight's agenda. My first question is about retrospective accommodation approval DA 2020 374, where it says the change of use from residential to visitor accommodation retrospective. Please can I learn about what the context of this is? Was somebody running visitor accommodation without requisite approvals? If so, for how long? What's the penalty for doing that? How often does this type of thing happen in Kingborough, and how do we stop it from happening again?
Ms. Tylemore.
Through you, Mayor, a few questions in there, so I'll do my best to answer them. The visitor accommodation was operating without approval. It was brought to our attention that that was the case. So before, I believe it was last year, off the top of my memory, that the state government brought in the requirement where Airbnb had to put their planning permit number in, so it was a lot easier that people were operating them without doing that. The state government provides us that data now, although it's a a mess of data. It's not well collated, and it has a lot of errors in it, which we fed back to the state government to enable councillors to do the enforcement for that. So that should help us be able to do it. We do on occasion look on that, but we just don't have the resource to proactively look at it. Certainly any complaints, we do that and follow it up. This application, I'm not sure how long it operated beforehand. It's not something we got caught up on. There was no infringement notice, so no large penalty issued to them, but they were required to pay double fees as it was a retrospective application, and now they're in compliance with their requirements.
Thanks. Is this something that happens rarely, would you say, or often, or somewhere in between?
Somewhere in between. There are properties that we know that are operating, and we do our best to keep ahead of them, and if we can get that cleansed data, that's going to make it better for us to do it, but it does take resourcing to do it. So there are some out there. Some people genuinely don't realise that they needed a permit to do it, although there's been a lot of advertising through the state government. They do need that. And it's important because not just planning, but under the building regulations, there's certain requirements they need, and the safety of the public is our priority. So in terms of fire restrictions and things like that.
I think, thanks very much. And also it's a competitive disadvantage, I guess, to everybody who is doing the right thing. And my next question on DAs is about the shipping containers. So there's two DAs here, DA 2019-64 in Tinderbox and DA 2020-545 at Apollo Bay. Both of these include the change of use from outbuilding to dwelling, including the additions of shipping containers. My first question on that is, for what purpose are these shipping containers being used in this instance, and what, if any, are the special considerations that council and developers need to take into account when assessing shipping containers as dwellings? For example, colour, settings, finishings, ventilation, cladding, insulation?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, the shipping containers in these two instances are both used for outbuildings, so therefore you can't use them for habitation. We write a condition on there that says that. If you did want to convert a shipping container for habitation purposes, you also need to get building approval. It has to be converted appropriately. One of those matters actually came before the chambers and was considered. So it depends on the zone and the overlay controls whether we consider things such as the biodiversity codes, so vegetation removal, the scenic codes, picks up colours, site levelling, all those sorts of elements of it. It depends on the zone and the overlay. So for these particular ones, they did have the scenic landscape code, so we did look at the colour. Vegetation had been removed, but we addressed that in the planning permit. And the questions that you had about ventilation and so forth and insulation, that all relates to if it was a habitable building, but it's just an outbuilding. And we don't need to know the specific purpose of an outbuilding because it's just classed as outbuilding. But typically people say car storage, shed, things like that, so they all meet those requirements.
Thank you, that's very helpful. My final question, Mayor, is about the efficiency dividend. In the state government's budget paper number 2, volume 1, page 9, it provides advice on the removal of all remaining efficiency dividend requirements for the state government, and it goes on to say the general manager has said that this is an acknowledgement of the requirement for an appropriately resourced public service sector as part of the state economic recovery. Similar considerations regarding council's efficiency dividend will need to be made by council when setting the next budget. And I looked at the state government budget papers. They say, in March 2020, in response to COVID, the government announced a range of measures to support Tasmanians. This included the removal of all remaining agency efficiency dividend requirements from 2020 to 2021 onwards to support the ongoing delivery of services and to support the Tasmanian economy. So my first question, Mayor, is do you agree with the reasoning provided in the government's budget that the removal of efficiency dividends will support the ongoing delivery of services and support the local economy to recover from COVID?
Is that specific?
To you, I guess, Mayor, yeah.
I might take it on notice because I haven't read the report that you're referring to. I think I'll take it on notice, thanks.
Okay, that's all right. A couple more potentially for on notice, maybe. So this is the state government budget, basically. Do you intend, Mayor, in the light of this state government decision to remove efficiency dividends, do you intend to continue with an efficiency dividend for Kingborough in the next financial year?
Councillor Cordova, as you know, I don't make decisions about efficiency dividends. We all do collectively, so 10 of us do. So I wouldn't make any decision about an efficiency dividend because it'd be up to this chamber, and in fact we've already made a decision on efficiency dividends, and in fact we've had a report back saying that the work is essentially completed, though I may be I'm happy to be corrected, but the efficiency dividend report was provided to us in December, outlined $380,000 worth of efficiency dividends. As I mentioned in the debate, I think it's debatable whether or not some of them were efficiency dividends, but the attempt was there from our staff to ensure that the underlying loss for this financial year was minimised as much as possible.
Thank you, Matt. Could you then, if possible, in part of your response on notice on this issue, I guess elucidate whether or not you plan to follow the state government's lead and abolish the efficiency dividend for Kimberley Council, or at least advocate for that in light of the state government's budget decisions?
Well, as I just told you, or I hope I explained, I don't make decisions about efficiency dividends, and you're aware of that. We all do. And in fact, collectively, we made a decision about an efficiency dividend that we put in place. A report's been come back to us that has completed the efficiency dividend work. And so any decision that I would make around an efficiency dividend for this year or for any subsequent years would be collectively in open session with my fellow councillors, and we'll be doing that as part of our budget workshop that we'll be doing in March, and then making the final decision in May in our budget meeting. But I wouldn't expect to see any change to the efficiency dividend policy that we've got in place for this financial year.
Thank you. And will your deliberations be informed by the state government, by the state government's budget removing efficiency dividends?
I don't have any deliberations, Councillor Cordova, because I'm part of this council that makes decisions. I don't have any executive powers whatsoever as under the Act. I'm a mere councillor when it comes to making decisions, so I don't know how I could possibly answer your question any better than that.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. There have been two dog attacks in Middleton and in Kettering, and I'm wondering if the dogs that have bitten the people have been destroyed. They were both taken to the council pound.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the dog attack at Middleton was handled by TAS Police. We acted under their instruction, and I'm not aware if the dog has been destroyed or not. I'd imagine the police would need to seek a court order for its destruction, and I'd need to take on notice as to the status of that. As to the one in Kettering, again, I'd need to take that on notice. I'm not aware of the detail, sorry.
Thank you. My next question, has the purchase of the private road, which is the extension of Mount Louise Road, been finalised by council? And if not, when will it be finalised?
Through you, Mayor, no, it hasn't been finalised. It would require to go through the process with the Lands Titles Office, and that can take some months before it's actually formalised on the title. So our property officer has been on leave. He is returning tomorrow, and I'd be able to get an update from him as to the status of it, but it hasn't been finalised as yet.
Thank you. And my last question, who is responsible for clearing the areas of land that are either the result of a road realignment or a road reserve that is not going to be progressed to a road in regards to clearing because of bushfire danger and things like this?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, do you have a specific example in mind?
Yes, I do.
Perhaps if you could provide the detail, and I'll take the question on notice. And
all right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A few questions from me. The first one are in regards to just some updates regarding the City Deal projects, wondering about the status of the park and rides, the bus shelter audits, and the possibility of a date for the frequent bus services.
Are I going better on notice, or do you want to have a... General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The status of the park and rides is that we have received development application for Firthside, and the Department of State Growth are finalising details for the lodgement of a development application for the Algona Road, the roundabout at Algona Road and Channel Highway, park and ride at Huntingfield. In terms of the bus audit, I don't have the detail on that, so I'll take that on notice to provide the council with an update. And in terms of the bus trial, the improved frequencies, etc., the intention is that that will be able to take place once the two park and rides have been constructed. And we're working on the detail of that, but we were hopeful that they may be able to commence before construction is completed.
Thank you. A further question regarding the park and rides. Representatives from State Growth met with council in regards to that, and also there was community consultation in regards to the park and ride. Is there any way that councillors can be made aware of what the community concerns were or what their input was in regards to the park and ride? And just to see, I guess, if when the DA is submitted or what community concerns were and wishes in regards to that engagement. Is that possible to contact State Growth and find out about that?
Perhaps from a DA point of view, Ms. Tolomore, are you able to answer in terms of how we'll be handling that?
Through you, Mayor, both the park and rides have been lodged. The general manager may not have been notified of the second one, so they are both in, and they're both have a request for further information at the moment. We're just trying to find more detail about that. Off the top of my head, I don't recall if there was a section in their report about what the outcomes of the community consultation were. I don't think that there is anything in there. We can ask that question separately from the further information request because it's not relevant for our assessment, but we can make contact and ask them for any details to do with that to provide to the councillors.
Thank you very much. Further question in regards to update on the Huntingfield development, if there's any, please.
Well, I learned a bit today from the Kingborough Chronicle. I'm not sure if you've seen it, although it's out tomorrow, of course, but it's online. The government's done some communication around the latest, it's stage one, lodgement of stage one. Ms. Tyler Moore may be able to provide more information, but in fact, I'll throw it at Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the application was lodged just before Christmas for the subdivision. It's stage one of five stages. We're currently undertaking our internal assessment of that, which also includes referral to a number of external stakeholders as well as internal stakeholders. Once we have that information together, it may mean that we need to request further information, more detail, and then it's up to them how long that they take to respond to that. And once it is satisfied, the requirements, it will proceed to public notice and all the information will be available for that application.
Thank you. Further on to that, do we know what stage the social and affordable housing will be?
I don't believe we do. Oh, Ms. Stevenson.
I will be able to provide further information after this week. I'll have a meeting with Minister Yench's office and also with the Community Engagement Officer for Housing Tasmania on Huntingfield. So I will circulate something after those meetings.
Wonderful, thank you. A few more questions in regards to some of the appendixes. So the Kingston Park update, and again, it's really fantastic. They're highlighted in yellow so that we can understand what new information is there. Just wondering if the Hub Cafe is open yet. I understand, I think they were waiting for the playground to be open, but there's a bit more activation happening there. I'm wondering if they do have a timeline for opening the cafe.
Ms. Tolomore.
Through you, Mayor, the planning permit was issued that they were to have a cafe there. It's in the location where the Traders in Purple office is. As part of the approval of that office, which was to be occupied for 2 years, was a requirement that they have a coffee window or a coffee area. It's my understanding that's not operating, and I haven't had any indication about when that's going to occur, but we can follow it up.
Thank you. A few questions in regards to the annual report, which is really fantastic. Thanks, staff, for the wonderful work in putting that together. Just to note where the list of councillors on different committees, it states Richard Atkinson left the Cycling South and I replaced him on that committee. So is it possible that my name could be added to that one, please?
Getting nods of the head from Ms Morton.
Thank you, Mayor. A few other questions on the annual report. Page 181. I'm not sure who's going to answer this one. It's in regards to the performance measures and the status. And again, thanks to the staff for all the great work across many, all the program areas. 1.4.1, the implement the Kingborough Climate Change Action Plan states 50%. And the reason says is unable to fully implement due to resourcing constraints. How can we aim to have 100% in that? What sort of resourcing constraints were there? And what can we sort of look around that in regards to getting that to 100% for next year's annual report?
Take on notice. Mr. Arnold? Yeah, we'll take that on notice.
Thank you. A further one as well, similar to that, the 1.4.4, in regards to the development and implement a strategy for reducing council's carbon footprint. I understand the draft strategy prepared but not endorsed by council. Again, I'm hoping this will be still on the cards for this area. How can we, again, look forward to 100% in that regards? Does it need to come back to council? Do we need to rework it? What can we aim for in regards to this one?
Take that on notice.
Thank you. And another one on page... I've written page 33. It's 2.2.3. I'll just scroll down to the page. Sorry. Page 189. Thank you, Councillor Cordova. The review and update the Kingborough Sport and Recreation Strategy. The update of the strategy is taking place over a two-year period. Okay, that one. Sorry, I didn't read the little bit down the bottom there. So if staff would like to comment in regards to how that's progressing, perhaps.
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, as indicated, we've given ourselves a two-year period in which to update the strategy. Our recreation officer has commenced work on that, and certainly the COVID shutdown period did enable some time to devote to that, but there's a body of work that needs to be done in relation to consultation with user groups and the broader community, as well as updating all of the various statistics that go to putting that strategy together. So that work will be continuing over the next 12 months.
Thank you.
Councillor Bastine.
Sorry, this is just to on the council representation on subcommittees. Again, if it can be altered, could I please have chair put after my name, which is missing?
Ms Morton looks very happy about changing. Certainly. Okay. Thanks. There's no other lights on, so in that case we'll move on to questions on notice from councillors. State budget from Councillor Cordova. That's on page 2. Southern Cross Care from Councillor Reet on page 3. And page 4 has the Kingston Park Playground from Councillor Westwood. All three have responses printed in the agenda. So the open session of council now adjourns and the planning authority commences at 5:57 p.m. And the first and only report is on page 5 of the agenda, and it's pilot rock lobster hatchery, including construction of new commercial building, demolition of existing buildings and removal of vegetation. And there's a recommendation on page 22. When we'd like to move and second the recommended motion. Councillor Street moves, second by Councillor Wass. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Before us, we've got an application for development for a pilot rock lobster hatchery, including the construction of a new commercial building. The advice from staff, and it's advice that I accept, is that the proposal is consistent with the use intended for the site in accordance with the recent amendment to the community purpose zone, and that it generally meets the requirements of the Kingaroo Interim Planning Scheme 2015 for both the community purpose and environmental management zones. The representations that we've received have been noted, and the issues that were identified in those representations have been dealt with in the report, and I accept the way that they have been dealt with as well. And I commend the report and the motion to approve to Council.
Further speakers? Councillor Midgley, and then Councillor Gordo.
Thank you, Mayor. I note this is a really important research for scientific understanding of rock lobsters, and what we are looking at today does raise a couple of questions from me. The first one is in regards to the wastewater that they say they are going to carefully look after before it's discharged through the UTAS pump station. I'm just wondering, how will this be continually monitored?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, the EPA has a big responsibility in considering those aspects of the application, and they obviously looked at detail at the proposal and the treatment of that effluent that's going to go out. The planning permit has the council conditions on it, but also has a series of EPA conditions, which I believe covers the monitoring and ongoing requirements for that. If I just have a moment, I could try and find the specific condition, but definitely that's one of their key aspects that they look at, and we didn't have any conflict with what they were suggesting.
Thank you. I note one of the comments from community was in regards to the traffic and concern regarding the traffic. I'm wondering, and I had a contact with a community member today, just they were wondering when the traffic count was actually taken, and noting that that sort of precinct is getting very busy now due to the great upgrade of the local soccer area and that sort of matters, and they were wondering when the traffic count was, when it occurred, was it sort of realistic in regards to the high and increasing usability of Nubina Crescent?
Through you, Mayor, I'd have to look the detail of it when it was done, which I'm happy to do because I have access to the system, but it's worth me saying that we are mindful of inappropriate surveys done at inappropriate times, so we do sometimes ask for delays outside of school holidays. We try and get the worst-case scenario, really, or the most typical case scenario for that. So if our development engineers had picked up that it was inappropriate, done at an inappropriate time, then we would have asked for it to be done in an appropriate time. But if you want to leave me for a minute or two, I can look it up in the system.
That's OK. I'm happy with that response. In regards to the significant loss of the high conservation trees, and as noted in the report, a potential loss of endangered habitat. Did the applicant put forward any other proposals in regards to the design to mitigate the loss of the 11 high conservation trees? I understand it's a difficult site and it was hard to get a design that could have prevented any loss, but I'm wondering, did they at all propose any sort of alternatives?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, there were no formal submissions of alternative designs, as in options 1, 2 or 3, but they rather went through what the limitations were. The officers have obviously, including myself, been to the site, and it is very limited where the available space for the facility would go. So, no, there wasn't a formal submission showing the alternatives, but it was well described, and we accepted what they proposed was the only option they really had to do a facility of this nature.
And I guess this may not be appropriate for this, but in regards to the further expansion, I guess loss of any potential further habitat, is that possibly on the cards for the future, or is this I guess I'm wanting to kind of understand, will there be potentially more loss of high conservation trees in that area? Well, I know we're just looking at this matter today.
Feels like you're already ruling yourself out of order, Councillor Midgley. It's really the Look, Ms. Tollemore, if you're happy to answer the question.
Through you, Mayor, if they wish to change what's proposed and what we're approving, they will need to come back for further approval unless it's exempt, but it's unlikely that high-value vegetation will be exempt from that, although in saying that, in the incoming Tasmanian planning scheme, they are lighter on for protection of vegetation, but I don't have the specifics in front of me to know whether they, it has been reduced for those particular zones. Obviously, environmental management zone will still be protected, but the community purpose would need to look at that detail, but it would need to come to council.
Thank you. And sorry if I missed this in the report. Did we actually know the age of the trees that are to be lost?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, it's not said in the report. We didn't say the age. The arborist report may have contained it. I'd need to look up the actual arborist report to see if that detail was included in there, which I can do.
Perhaps at a later stage, if I could just be emailed that, please.
Yes.
Thank you.
Happy to do.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a really interesting one and an important one, and it's been complex to try and weigh up all the relevant information and also the submissions that we've had in opposition to it, which include really valid concerns about the potential environmental impacts, the denigration of the trees that are there, important habitat for swift parrot, 40-spotted pardalote, the traffic concerns. So before I get into my substantive, I'd just like to clarify with a question about the traffic. So it says at 2.5.4, traffic impacts to the road network and pedestrians, which was raised in the representations in opposition to this proposal. It says Council's Development Engineering Officer has reviewed the proposal and, given that the proposed use will utilise existing accesses to the site and will result in less than 40 additional vehicle movements per day, the existing road network is considered capable of supporting the development and no upgrades are warranted in this instance. So my question on traffic is, firstly, can you just step us through what the traffic impact assessment, how they measure it, when they measure it, paint a picture of what that assessment is like?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, I'm just bringing up the traffic report now, and forgive me because I haven't read it for some time and I wasn't the assessing officer. I'm just trying to bring up the dates. So the report was done by Midson Traffic, which is an independent traffic engineer who undertakes these types of reports frequently. They often look at the TIAs, the traffic impact assessments, by the state government as well, to look at crash statistics and so forth, but there was nothing particularly notable on that in this area. And just scrolling through to see the timing. So the project scope, just to give you an idea of what they're actually looking at, included the review of the existing road environment in the vicinity of the site and the traffic additions on the road network, provision of information on the proposed development with regards to traffic movements and activity, identification of traffic generation potential of the proposal with respect to the surrounding road network in terms of the road network capacity, review of the parking requirements of the proposed development, assessment of the parking supply with the planning scheme requirements, and traffic implications of the proposal with respect to external road networks in terms of traffic efficiency and road safety. So it's worth also just pointing out that this traffic report was available as part of the suite of documents on the public notification that the public had available to them. And just scrolling down to the dates for their data collection. So the traffic and independent traffic engineers suggest that the traffic generation of the development was likely to be in the order of 29 vehicle movements per day with a peak of 10 vehicles per hour. So the reason that our traffic engineer made reference to the 40 is because the planning scheme talks about if it's above or below 40 movements a day. So obviously that's 11 lower than that trigger. It states the on-site car parking meets the requirements of the planning scheme, and the accessible parking is also met.
Okay, so the assumption here, I think, is that it until it gets up to 40 vehicle movements per day, firstly, it's less, that's what we've just heard now, but secondly, 40 is kind of the threshold or the benchmark at which these things need to be reassessed. My question is, how many cars could this area take? Is it 40? Is that how many vehicle movements before a traffic impact assessment would say, well, this development is a problem?
Ms. Tolan.
Through you, Mayor, no, it's not as simple as that. It has to look at the nature of the road, whether it's carrier road, side road, the width of the road, and I should probably point out I'm not a traffic engineer but have a fair bit of experience having to do with large developments. So there's a whole group of assessment tools that go into that. For example, if the councillors would like to think of the one where we changed the use of the call centre out at Huntingfield to a school, and there's requirements in there about the traffic assessments and ongoing requirements. It's probably worth noting with this subject site that the buildings that are being pulled down and removed for that, which was to do with the breeding program for the Orange Belly Parrots, and they had other uses up there, that generated a number of vehicle movements as well, and then that's taken away. So it's not just a whole new one on top. There are other uses which are not going and entering that site anymore, so the traffic won't be as noticeable as it would be if it was a completely virgin site.
Okay, thank you. And I can see that it says that no parking and keep clear signage must be installed for the turning bay, and there's a number of conditions there relating to the parking spaces. Can you just remind me how many parking spaces are proposed?
Ms. Tolemore.
Through you, Mayor, on page 6, it's 12 parking bays and that includes one with person with limited mobility.
Okay. And did we... Thank you for that. And did we get any sense of how many people we expect will be working in the development? I mean, if there's 12 parking bays, can we therefore extrapolate that it's 12 FTE, 12 staff, 24 staff, 100 staff? I assume that would have been in the traffic impact statement.
Through you, Mayor, I don't have the number on there. It is unlikely to be. Depends on the nature of the use. So I'm not familiar with whether they're going to have people there outside business hours or not, given the nature of that sort of thing, having to monitor it. It is possible. So there's a changeover. So we do the same thing with, like, retirement villages where you have a shift on, shift off. So it does vary. So it's not necessarily how many staff, or you might have job share people. So I can't tell you how many people are employed, but the parking requirements are met by what the plan scheme required.
I guess just to thank you so much to allay the fears of the those who represent us who put in submissions opposing this. What if, as the development progresses, there's more traffic than MITSIN anticipated? What recourse is there to actually deal with what traffic impacts might arise?
Ms. Tolman.
Through you, Mayor, it's not a simple process to go through, but certainly we have the ability to do it because their application, which is a declaration that it was true and correct, is based on certain information that's provided. In this instance, it would be their hours of operation or how many staff, the nature of the uses, same as whether they have large trucks or not. So all those things are supported in their application. If they're found to be moving significantly away from that, then they're not in compliance with the plan. So even though that's not an endorsed plan, it was the basis of what the decision was made. So we would have the ability to follow that up, and it would be an issue that the application wasn't true and correct.
Okay, thank you. And I guess on a separate point, but similar, we're talking now about enforcement and monitoring and making sure that the plans are substantially the same as what might get approved, depending on how the vote turns out tonight. My real concern, which Councillor Midgley raised also, is about the environmental values and the impact with the trees being removed, and clearly no alternatives were offered. It does say in terms of the trees that a tree plan needs to be provided, the tree plan provided to the satisfaction of the manager development services, which identifies the location and the size of the trees, clearly identifies those which should be removed and those which will stay, and demonstrates that the proposed development and associated infrastructure are designed and located to to retain trees identified for retention. What's the monitoring process or the enforcement or the, I guess, ongoing checking to make sure that the mitigation and protection measures are actually implemented to the standard that's required?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, one of the main triggers is the start works notice so that we know that it's been installed, and it does require that prior to doing buildings works, they need to contact us for us to go and inspect it. Unfortunately, we're not resourced enough to be able to consistently go out there. We will go in response, and it's likely that we would have a visit at some stage if we're in the area, but I don't want to give out a false idea that we have the capacity to keep repeatedly going out there. But certainly, if a resident was to raise, and quite often they are our ears and eyes for the community with 37,000 properties, we can't keep an eye on them all, so we do rely a little bit on the residents to let us know, and really appreciate when they do let us know that something isn't quite right, and we go out and have a look and follow up from there.
Thank you. I think that's a really important point. And so to conclude, Mayor, I just want to point out that the condition number 3 here is the offset, to offset the loss of these 3 high conservation value trees and the 6 trees of very high conservation value that are going to be removed, council's going to receive $3,750. And that's not a fault of this development application. It's a fault of, I think, our biodiversity offset policy, which is really, I believe, grossly, manifestly inadequate. But I will say on this development application, there has been an enormous body of work that's been done. The application was referred to TasWater, the Tasmanian Heritage Council, the Environmental Protection Authority, and all of the referral agencies are supportive of the proposal, subject to the conditions which you can see here. I think this proposal is, the proposed use is reliant on its proximity, on where it is, on the coast, on the research services that are around it. I think it will be an important development, and I think it will bring benefits. I'm not entirely comfortable that the traffic issues and the environmental degradation issues will be properly monitored, but I guess we need to put our faith in, you know, basically we need more resources in order to achieve that kind of monitoring that I would like to see. But on balance, I think that this is an important proposal, it's an important development, and so I'll be supporting it. Thanks, Mayor.
There are no other lights on at the moment. There still aren't. Councillor Street, would you like to sum up?
No, actually.
Very good. Okay, the motion, as moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Wass, is that the Planning Authority resolves that the development application for Pilot Rock Lobster Hatchery, including the construction of new commercial building, demolition of existing buildings and removal of vegetation for irrigating planning, be approved subject to the following conditions, and they're all listed in the agenda. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motion's carried unanimously. Next item is that the Planning Authority session adjourns and the open session of Council commences at 6:17 p.m. And the next item is motions of which notice has been given, and no notices of motion were received. Petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. The light just flickered, so if we go offline, Facebook viewers, you know why. Petitions received in the last period. So we had a petition received in the last period, and it was for repair or replace collapsed road surface in Village Drive, Kingston. There's a recommended motion on page 70. Would anyone like to move or second it? Moved by Councillor Cordover, seconded by Councillor Midgley. So the motion is that the petition containing 150 signatures be received and referred to the appropriate department for a report to council. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motion's carried unanimously. Next item, I'll move now to page 71, which is officers' reports to council. And the first item, the first officer's report to council is smoke-free area declaration for Kingston Park Playground with a recommended motion on page 75. Councillor Midgley moves. Second of Councillor Reet. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Before us tonight we have a report seeking Council's approval to declare the Kingston Park Playground, Stage 1 of Public Open Space, a smoke-free area in accordance with the Public Health Act. I note that in 2019, Council approved the Kingborough Community Hub for a smoke-free area. As the playground is adjoining the community hub, it's an extension of this. It makes absolute complete sense. All of our playgrounds, I'm quite sure, are smoke-free in Kingborough and growing across Tasmania, I'm sure. And I think for the health and well-being of our community, our children and young people, that I hope Council can endorse this report. And I look forward to the playground opening and it being smoke-free.
Councillor Corover.
Thanks, Mayor. In a previous iteration of my work, I worked for the Heart Foundation, and as everybody I think knows, one of the most important ways that we can disincentivise people from smoking is to make sure that we have healthy spaces and places, and part of that is to have smoke-free area declarations. So I think this will continue the good work that is being done to mitigate the harmful effects of smoking in the community, and so this motion has my support. Thank you.
No, the lights are on. I just wanted to say, I just tried to find it, but I think it was Councillor Graham Berry who first brought a notice of motion. Councillor Reid's nodding to Council about this way back when, early 2017, and was very passionate about this. So I'm sure he'd be pleased to hear that if this motion is carried, that we're continuing on and finalising that issue that he started. Sum up, Councillor Midgley. Okay, the motion moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Reid, is that Council approve the smoke-free area declaration for the Kingston Park Playground, Stage 1 of Public Open Space, in accordance with Attachment A and the process outlined in this report. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motion's carried unanimously. Next item is the Kingston Park Public Open Space, Stage 2. Recommend a motion on page 80. Moved by Councillor Cordover. Seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Mayor. So what we're looking at here is the report to seek Council's endorsement to utilise external funds for the second stage of the Kingston Park public open space development. Kingston Park is turning into a terrific asset in Kingborough. It's certainly the adventure playground. The public open space there is going to enhance the health and well-being of people in the community. It's also going to be a great place for families and individuals to play, to rest, to enjoy the great outdoors, and also have all the convenience of being close to our central business district. What we're looking at here is basically the expression of the understanding that everybody wanted high-quality public open space in Kingston Park. And the current situation is that the project has allocated $1.2 million for the public open space stage, and it's scheduled to take place in the 2022-23 financial year. Ideally, this would be done sooner. The current budget of $1.2 million is insufficient to complete all of the expected work that's been done for the design stage for the design of stage two of the public open space. And recently, Council's been notified that additional funding will be made available under the Commonwealth Government's COVID-19 Local Roads and Community Infrastructure Program. So Council's previously received nearly $600,000 under Phase 1 of this program, and a further $1.4 million will be made available under Phase 2. So it's proposed that this additional $1.4 million be allocated to the Stage 2 POS, Public Open Space, at Kingston Park, in order that all of the additional components can be included. So essentially, this is a great opportunity to move things forward, expedite things, and to get the public open space that the community has asked for to move quickly. So with that, I would like to ask the author of the report to take us through what is so timely and important about this motion.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I guess what is timely is the fact that we're about to complete the playground, and we know that's going to be a very popular facility. What isn't included in the playground is a public toilet facility, so users of the playground will be required to use the facilities at the community hub, which are acceptable but not ideal to have to walk that amount of distance, and a purpose-built public toilet facility linked to the park certainly is ideal, so that's one of the components that we're proposing. And to complete the playground with these additional public open space facilities, I guess, is the cherry on top of what will be a high quality and well utilised facility. The reason for doing it sooner, as I indicated, on one hand, it's to provide the facilities that will complement our playground, but on the other, there is a time necessity, given that the requirements of the grant require us to spend it within this 12-month period. So that's the reason we've recommended we take advantage of this opportunity. And from a financial perspective, the opportunity to use external funds to fund a project that otherwise council would need to find the funding for is one that makes good financial sense.
Thank you, Mr. Smee. Would Mr. Smee also like to maybe highlight the deadline for completion and, I guess, some of the risks that are associated with this proposal?
Through you, Mayor, I think the report outlines those quite adequately, but in essence, we need to have the work completed this calendar year, and the risk is that we need to get a development application approved, we need to get the design detail completed, we need to go through a tender process and have contractors available to do the work within the required time frame. So it will be tight, and it's certainly something we've discussed with the Kingston Park team, and they've indicated that they have a level of confidence that we will be able to achieve it, but admittedly it will be tight.
Thank you, Mayor. So to conclude, I'm really excited about this proposal because essentially what we're getting is an additional toilet block so that people don't have to walk up to the community hub. We're getting some additional public spaces, a gathering circle and a picnic lawn, the terraced seating for the amphitheatre and an additional barbecue area. This funding will bring forward some really important works, and it's to the benefit of all of us. So I thank the author and I endorse this proposal. Thank you.
Councillor Midgley. Councillor Midgley and Councillor Reid. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I too also support this, and I think it's a great extension of what hopefully, as I keep saying, about 10 years will be an amazing, vibrant place that we wish we all bought property in. So a couple of questions. I mean, a point in regards to the public amenity. It is very important, but also it would be great to bring people to the hub because we want people to use the cafe. So I just wanted to put that as a point forward. If I can just have some explanation. So I understand the playground had extensive consultation and input from community and design and things like that. Did this part of this stage two, what has the engagement and consultation been in regards to what's happening? So I note there's fitness nodes and the amphitheatre and the sort of riding, maybe walking track. I'm just, if I can have a bit of explanation around that, please.
This is me.
Through you, Mayor. So the design plan for the public open space has been through that extensive public consultation process. So what is proposed certainly shouldn't be anything new to the community, but we had a limited amount of funding to implement that plan. So in essence, this brings forward the funding available to complete the public open space plan that has previously been through the consultation process. There will be some elements of the detailed design for which we may need to seek some additional feedback from the public. For example, the exercise nodes, we were recently contacted by an interested member of the community who was keen to ensure that was fit for purpose, and more than happy to engage for some further consultation on the specifics of that issue. But in essence, the plan has been through that consultation process, and it's not going to be something new to the community. It's been contained within what's been previously advertised.
Thank you. That's great to know. In regards to the amphitheatre, can I just understand the purpose of this? Is it for outdoor concerts, plays, musicals, that sort of thing? And the Mayor is nodding yes.
Yes.
So in regards to that...
Carols.
Carols, yes. Can't forget the carols. in regards to that, the hub, we know there's been some matters and issues in regards to the sound. And I guess for the amphitheatre, are we sort of checking that with performers and people who, you know that kind of thing and have expertise in regards to that, just to mitigate any loss or, you know, issues around the sound and, all that sort of a thing. I guess that will come down detailed in the design phase, but I think just due to the hub and the sound issues that we have there, it'd be great to just get it right first time.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I guess in an outdoor environment, issues of acoustics aren't something that you have a lot of control over. They're very weather dependent, but certainly the design of the amphitheatre in terms of maximising its potential use for those activities will be something that we will seek expert advice on.
Thank you. Will there be any additional bike parking?
Mr. Smee.
That's not something that we have proposed, is my short answer.
Is there any bike parking in the playground area?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I understand that the playground area does include some bike racks for bike parking, yes.
Thank you. What about electric vehicle charging? Is that all anywhere a possibility in this second stage?
Yes, just me.
Through you, Mayor, this is specifically about public open space. An electric vehicle charging point would be a matter that would fall outside of this grant application and would be something that council would need to consider either as a capital bid or as some other future external funding opportunity.
Thank you. And will at all any of the council committees be involved, the access committee or the bike committee? Will they need to be involved or have any input in regards to any part of this second stage?
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, we would certainly refer final design plans to the Access Committee as we have done with the Stage 1. I wouldn't see a requirement to refer to the Bike Committee unless there was going to be cycling infrastructure included.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smee.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you, and like other speakers, I am very excited by this because I see it as a wonderful addition to the significant playground that we will see opened in the next few months, hopefully. I just want to ask a little bit about the pathway. I noticed the red dotted line. I assume that's the on the picture is the intended route of the pathway. Is that correct, Mr. Smee?
This is on page 81?
On page 81, yep.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I don't have a red dotted line on my plan, but included within the plans is a network of paths through the public open space.
Sorry, just realised that's the border.
Yes.
So now I can see where, obviously I've got a special copy here with red lines on it. But there's the path kind of like, it winds around that area, which is terrific. But then what are we going to do for future to join I guess it's the northern end of that path, around where number 9 is? Because the path sort of continues around. How is that going to join up to the existing path that exists around Whitewater Crescent, or is there no proposal to join that up?
This is me.
Through you, Mayor. No, the intention is that that would link in with that existing path that goes under the underpass,
mm-hmm.
so that the whole network is linked. That is the intention.
Right, so what we see here then around number 9, is that is that part of the existing path?
This is me.
Through you, Mayor, know that that would be a new pathway.
Right.
The intent is to replace the existing rather damp pathway with a concrete.
Oh, okay, great. I was going to ask about the surface treatment, and obviously that's something that the Access Committee would be very interested in. And I do note it says here DDA compliant shared shared pathway. And look, I've got confidence that our urban design planner, Mr. Donnelly, will come and talk to the Access Committee about the details of some of these. He's been very good with engaging with us, but we certainly would like the opportunity, once we do have more detailed plans, to have a say, because I note there with the amphitheatre it talks about steps, and I'd be interested in how we will accommodate people with mobility devices into that amphitheatre area, because unfortunately what has occurred in the past at the community hub with the fine detail of in the initial plans, there were some significant issues that were overlooked for people with disabilities that we've had to since put on a list to have remediated so that they can have access to all parts of Kingston Park and its facilities. I just want to ask about the fitness nodes. There isn't anything in the report about that. Could you just indicate what is intended with those as well?
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor. So point number 14 in that concept plan identifies that there would be a number of pockets within the open space where there is outdoor fitness equipment located. So they're called fitness nodes, and that's the intent that there would be three or four of them where there is you could jog around if you like, move from one station to another and do some sort of a circuit. So that's loosely the concept, but as I said, the fine details yet to be determined.
Okay, thank you, and I look forward to the Access Committee's involvement.
No other lights on. Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. This has been a good discussion, and I think it's raised some really important points, especially about access, and I thank Councillor Reid for bringing that up, and also Councillor Midgley's points about broadening the communications and the transparency and the engagement, and that includes having discussions with the Access Committee. Really important, I think, to bring up electric vehicle charging stations. By 2030, all of the state government's fleets are going to be electric vehicles. We're going to see a lot of electric vehicles in Kingborough. This is about public open space, but there'll be a lot of people using this public open space, and I hope to see them all in electric vehicles or on their bikes to get there. So, of course, having bike lanes and bike parking is going to be really important. So if we keep those things in our minds as we move forward, what this is a really exciting opportunity to expedite the process, to get a bit more money to improve the plans that little bit and to get them done faster. So a terrific opportunity, and I look forward to seeing progress be made. Thanks, Mayor.
Okay, the motion was moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Mitchley, and it's that Council endorse the use of funds made available from the Commonwealth Government's Phase 2 COVID-19 Local Roads and Community Infrastructure Program for the upgrade of the Kingston Park Stage to public open space area as described within this report. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion's carried unanimously. Next item is the fee exemption and reductions policy recommended. Motion is on page 83. Mover and seconder, please. Councillor Street moves. Councillor Midgley seconds. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. We've got a review of the fee exemptions and reductions policy. The policy is still fit for purpose with a couple of amendments. One of those amendments is in relation to the maintenance of a register of all fees waived or reduced. For publication in the Council's annual report, and I thank staff for following up on that following a discussion with councillors regarding the community grants policy when that was suggested as being best practice for transparency of our operations. The only other amendment is an increase of $300 to $500 for the delegation provided to departmental managers, and that's so that we can account for CPI increases over the lifespan of the policy. Which I don't remember the length of time general manager 4 years. It's 4 years. So should more than account for CPI over 4 years. But if staff say that's an appropriate level, then I'm happy to accept that advice.
Councillor Cora.
Thanks, Mayor. I had a question about the CPI increase. Is this a standard thing in all of our policies to try and account for CPI in this kind of way?
Through you, Mayor, I guess it's not really relevant in most of our policies, but the main driver in this one was we do have some fees that when this policy was developed back in 2018, you know, they were around a figure of $280, and then now 3 years later and looking forward, we're getting to cross that $300 threshold. So that was the reason it was looked at in relation to this policy. But I'm struggling to think of any other policies where a CPI would apply, but I mean, common sense would say that where applicable, yes, we would apply it.
Thank you. Mr. Smee and Mayor, I think that this is a fairly straightforward policy update, and as Councillor Street has alluded to, there's not very many significant changes. One policy, I guess, in contradistinction to this, where there is no CPI but probably should be, is the biodiversity offset policy. So currently the $500 trees are set at $500 and they're not going up. But this is an example, I think, Mayor, where CPI adjustments are really sensible. They make sense because it means that the policy can keep up in time. And so, of course, when we do turn our attention, Mayor, to the biodiversity offset policy, we must update that CPI adjustment as well. So I endorse this. Thanks very much, Mayor.
Okay, thanks. The motion was moved by Councillor Street, who I assume does not want to sum up. And it was seconded by Councillor Midgley, and it is that Council endorse the update of Policy 1.17, Fee Exemptions and Reductions, as attached to this report. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried unanimously. Next item is the Financial Report, and that's got a recommended motion on page 89. And would someone like to move and or second the motion? Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Reet. Councillor Cordova doing a power of work tonight in Councillor Fox's absence. We appreciate it. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This is the financial report, and it's fairly good news, I guess, and I'm going to ask the author to comment on it in a moment. But my initial take from this is that our rates are $112,000 over budget, with the general rate being $71,000 over and the garbage rate being $43,000 over. The statutory fees and fines are $230,000 over budget, due primarily to planning fees of $209,000 over budget due to greater than expected planning applications. User fees are $217,000 over budget. Grants recurrent were $270,000 over budget, primarily due to grant income carried forward 2019-20 under the new accounting standards, and a new grant of $96,000 for community facilities upgrades. So before I'd like to throw to Mr. Breen to explain some of these, I guess, to account for why they're so far over budget, I guess the take-home message for me is that we were all responsible fiscal managers when it came to this COVID disaster. We knew that it would significantly impact our budget. Indeed, it has. I think it is probably too early to say how much it has impacted us in the long term. But for all intents and purposes, my understanding is that Council is travelling really well, that we've been very responsible, that we've been quite frugal, and that people really like living and working and recreating in our municipality because the development applications are through the roof, despite living through a global pandemic that we haven't seen in 100 years. So, Mr. Breen, if you'd be so kind, are there any things that took you by surprise in this report?
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Look, essentially, I agree with Councillor Cordova. This is a good result for this year. Admittedly, we did have quite conservative budgets. We put our budgets together April, May last year. It was a very uncertain period of time with the COVID-19 pandemic, and so consequently, there was a lot of things that we closed down at the time, the Sports Centre being one of those. and we really did not have a time frame for the sports centre to get up and going again. So there were some conservative predictions in regards to fee income in particular, which, as you'll be aware now, the sports centre was up and going in July at a slightly reduced capacity, but really did pick up to full capacity very quickly. And what we thought would take 6 months was really up and going in about 2 or 3 months. So certainly that's had a big impact. Probably the surprising one is the planning fees. There was an expectation that things would slow down. We didn't see it early on. Thought, or perhaps it was just developments and applications in the pipeline. But I think the event, the introduction of the home builder grants certainly kept things going. And I think there's still discussions this week with the development manager, and there still is an expectation this will continue on through the next 12 months. So I think that's been a good result. So I think we are well positioned. I think on the other side, we did talk early on about the efficiency dividend. We've been able to deliver on that. We've kept our expenses under control quite comfortably. So I think, you know, there's no doubt our revenue will be up. Our expenses will be either on or below budget. I think we'll produce a result that, interesting, will be close to being in line with our loss associated with the Tazwater dividend. So if we didn't have a Tazwater dividend, then I imagine we would have been getting pretty close to break even.
Thank you, Mayor. One extra question is that in 4.2 on page 89, Council's cash and investments amount to $10.5 million at the end of December, which is up $4 million from the December 2019 figure due to increases in interest-free borrowings. How does this compare to, historically, Kimbra's cash position? Are we in a very safe zone, or are we... in a historical context, still tracking behind the mark, so to speak?
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Yeah, certainly $10 million is a pretty comfortable level of cash for this council. I think it's certainly a number that, around about that $8-10 million is a comfortable level, and one that we would generally aim for. We've seen over the early part of 2020, and going into the later part of 2020, our cash reserves got down to $7-8 million, and that's a bit on the low side. We are fortunate at the moment that we have the interest-free loans. We also have approved an additional $9 million in interest-free loans, which we need to take up before June, so Council can expect a paper over the next 2 or 3 months, allowing us to go and grab those funds, and so we'll have at the end of the financial year, I imagine we'll have a very comfortable level of cash supported by those interest-free loans.
Thank you, Mayor. I think this is really comforting to hear, and I think that we as a council were right to have a risk appetite that was significantly constrained because of the uncertainty that's inherent with a global pandemic. Mr. Breen, do you think that we're now at a point where we can start to be confident and maybe a bit more flexible with respect to how much this council spends? In your assessment, hindsight's 2020. If we had known now, then, should we have been more... should we have been less conservative with how frugal we were?
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. I guess essentially council is still producing a pretty substantial underlying deficit for the year, and that's certainly not a position that we would like to be in. Originally, in our long-term financial plan, this year was to be the year where we started with a sustainable underlying surplus and continued on into the future. There's no doubt the COVID-19 pandemic has had an impact, and certainly the loss of Tazwater dividends has had quite a substantial impact. In a week or so's time, we'll be talking about the long-term financial plan. I think that's an opportunity to have a bit of a look at casting forward. We're certainly trying to put forward a plan that allows council to get to an underlying surplus within 3 years, and that's when a lot of these interest-free borrowings will start to mature, and we've either got to repay them or we've got to start paying interest. So I think that's probably the opportunity then to have a bit of discussion about the finances moving forward and what opportunities there are within the council.
Thank you, Mr. Brennan. Thank you, Matt.
Are the lights on, Councillor Watts?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Mr. Breen, you are the guru. Mm. On page 83, and can you get me some of it, please? I note that we have my state investments at 45% interest. I want some too.
Mr. Breen.
I take it you'll let us know at the next meeting what that figure should be, because I know it wouldn't be 4.5 as well.
Yeah, through the mayor, no, I'd say that's certainly an error, and we'll fix it up for the next meeting. Thank you for pointing
But if you
out.
Can get it at 45, well, I think we'll all take it up. Look, a couple of serious questions, and that is in relation to CapEx works and maintenance works, and I know you're not the best person to ask, but are we on target for those completion dates? Have we had delays from COVID that are going to affect the 30th of June?
Mr. Arnold or Mr. Breen?
Through you, Mayor. Certainly, the one thing we're starting to see at the moment is some significant challenges around availability of contractors. I think that's probably the one, and that's certainly an impact of COVID. So I know we're working hard to try and identify contractors that can undertake the work at a reasonable price, but certainly there will be some delays that will impact on.
Mr. Arnold?
Through Mr. Mayor. Just to add to that, Councillor Wass, we are closely monitoring the availability of contractors, and in speaking with Mr. Johnson earlier today, I can report that he believes that the maintenance program is on track, but in terms of contractor availability, that may necessitate a further report to Council in coming months.
Thank you, because that's exactly what I was going to ask for, if we can be kept up to date and drip-fed with that information. My last question is, I guess we're back to normal as far as we're ever going to be, and our normal today is totally different than what we've been used to, and going forward our normal could be back to what it was last year, and wouldn't surprise me at all. But I'm just wondering whether we're back to the normal rundown of staff leave, whether staff leave is now reducing as we want it to, because you're not going to be able to go overseas. They're talking about overseas will be 2022 at the earliest, and who knows, interstate. We hope for Councillor Reek that she gets to WA, but I mean, states are open one day and closed the next, and Victoria, you know, if you come from an area that's got COVID, then you're not getting back in unless you're an overseas tennis player. So my question is, are we diminishing that leave and it's not being built up, and, you know, do we have comfort that that's happening?
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. I think the main aim has been trying to get people to take holidays during the summer period. So certainly there's a lot of leave in January, February, March, even pushing out into Easter in early April. So that will certainly soak up a lot of the excess leave that we've had. But I think it will take some certainty around state borders more than international borders to get our leave provisions down to where we saw them previously. So we've certainly done a lot of work with managers and getting them to talk to their staff. We've targeted some of the long-term, offenders that have got excess leave. So we're doing all we can, but I think it will take another year or so to get leave down to normal levels.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions. I note page 88, the green waste collection revenue is on budget. I understand last report it was under budget. Just wondering if you had a few more people perhaps uptake the green waste collection.
Mr. Breen.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, we're certainly seeing a bit of an uptake in the green waste collection. Yep.
Wonderful. And page 115, under turf activities, is it a new budget line there that says non-ground specific? I guess that means, you know, being a variety of grounds.
Mr. Breen?
Through you, Mayor. Yes, what we essentially do is we're trying to put things across to all the grounds, but quite often we'll get costs which are spread across all those grounds. So what we tend to do is we'll put it into that non-specific, and then we'll talk to the turf guys and say, look, what's an appropriate allocation of these funds? So then we'll take it out of that category and put it against the particular ground. So it might be, look, they all get 10% or, you know, it's 50 here and 20 here. So we'll do attempt to move it around so eventually they will all get cleared.
Thank you.
Okay, now the lights are on. Councillor Cordova, all good. So the motion is that Council endorses the attached financial report at 31 December 2020. It was moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Reid. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. The next item is confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures, Regulation 2015. Council by absolute majority move into closed session and consider the following items, which is just confirm minutes and application for leave of absence. Would anyone like to move or second that? Moved by Councillor Mitchell, seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Thanks to everyone at home for tuning in with us this evening. We look forward to seeing you again online on the 1st of February, but maybe some of you even inside the chamber. Have a great night. Go Hurricanes.